What's up, Atlanta? Happy first full padded practice day to you and me and all of Falcons Nation out there. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you for the full four until 10 o'clock tonight. Jason Longshore comes your way then with Atlanta Soccer tonight. I have, let's see, many things to discuss with you on a spicy scorcher of a day here in the great city of Atlanta and the great state of Georgia, fitting for the day of the first fully padded practice at Flowery Branch. We were thumping people, some more than others, and there's one guy that we need to talk about. One man to rule the world, or in this case, one man to rule the practice field at Flowery Branch. And that is rookie sensation. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Sensation.
That's right, Warren. Rookie sensation. And I'm going to explain. James Pierce Jr. This dude's magnetic. This dude is not only popping pads, he's making headlines. He's got everybody talking about him. And I love it. You know why? It's not just because he's a dog. Not that kind of dog. That's Jalen Walker. He's a DOG. But this dude is making his presence known. He is physical. He is aggressive. He sets the tone. He sets the edge, literally and figuratively. I'm going to use that one a lot. You guys are great. You guys, I'm sorry. Let me, at 6:05 on a Tuesday, Oren, going to apologize in advance. I'm going to use that tired joke a lot about how James Pierce Jr. sets the edge literally and physically, and literally, you know what I'm saying. He is that guy who sets the tone. And we're seeing that early on in camp. Literally and figuratively is what I was trying to say. But he sets the tone. And he has been a guy, ever since he put on the uniform here at the practice field, we've started really talking about him. We know what happened when we drafted him. You move up in the first round. You take him at number 26. And essentially, Terry Fontenot and his staff said, hey, this guy to us is well worthy of the pick of the first round next year where we think we're going to be drafting. We think this dude is a baller. And we think this dude is going to be something special. So well worth it for us to trade back up into the first round and get this dude at a steal at 26. And we were all like, okay. And then that thing about character concerns came out. Does he love football? That gray cloud of a question that if you get tagged with it at the draft, it's almost a guarantee, unless you're like Aaron Donald level talent, that you may drop a little. Because if you get that concern that you don't love the game, this is a hard game to play if you don't love it. So then the practices start. And we hear this dude getting in the face of offensive linemen, getting involved in a couple of scuffles, and here we are. And now everybody's talking about him. I'm going to let you hear from Leonard Floyd, Michael Penix, Raheem Morris. Now everybody's getting asked about this dude. And everybody's starting to talk about this dude. So it made me think, you know, if there's one guy that's going to be the turnkey player for this defense to ignite, the one guy that's going to start that engine, do you think it's going to be James Pierce Jr.? Are you jumping on the bandwagon early? We're taking on all comers here, people. Get on the hype train for James Pierce Jr. I am loving what I'm seeing out of this dude. This dude is a baller with edge. Again, literally and figuratively. This dude brings it. It being the attitude. It being the enforcer mentality. It being the secret sauce this defense simply has not had. As much as we love Grady, and as much as he damn well tried his best every single year, and he was a top five player at his position for a long time, James Pierce Jr. just seems to have this thing that defense, all great defenses need. And I'm not comparing him to these guys, But that's what guys like TJ Watt have. They have it. That's what guys like Myles Garrett have. They have it. Danielle Hunter has it. It's not just the physical tools. It's a presence. It's a persona. You go to practice and watch practice at Cleveland. You don't want to blank around with Myles Garrett. You go to practice in Pittsburgh. You sure, as you know what, don't want to mess around with TJ Watt. Go stand next to Danielle Hunter. That dude is breathing fire out of his snout. Like, those are the types of dudes we saw TJ Watt single-handedly wreck the game in week one for the Steelers against the Falcons last year. Again, I'm not comparing them talent-wise. There's a long way to go for a James Pierce Jr. to get to anywhere near that level. But what I'm saying is the early signs for James Pierce Jr. are showing us that this dude wants it. This dude wants to be that guy. Again, what was the joke we made at the beginning of the show yesterday? The off-the-bus type team. That's what I want the Falcons to be this year. And James Pierce Jr., according to all reports, is setting that tone. That when the Falcons walk off the bus, you're like, oh, we don't want to play those guys. Those guys look mean. Those guys look nasty. Those guys look scary. I don't want to play those dudes. And James Pierce Jr. appears to be that type of player. And that makes me really excited. So let's see. Early returns, Falcons Nation. If you were at Flowery Branch any of the days, did you see that from Pierce? If you're not at Flowery Branch, are you hearing the same things I'm hearing about James Pierce Jr.? Are you as excited as I am about James Pierce Jr.? And most importantly, here's the question. Do you think that as a rookie, he can be that turnkey that ignites the defense? Or do you think it could be somebody else? Who is that guy? Right now, it looks like James Pierce Jr. has a shot as anyone else. We know there are other guys there, though. Jesse Bates is still hanging around. Caden Ellis is still hanging around. Onyemata is still hanging around. A.J. Terrell. Those guys are all still there. So if you want to stand for one of those guys, be my guest. Make your case. But right now, what it seems like is that the tone and the tenor of practices are starting to change a little bit. It's getting a little rough and tumble out there. And I love it. Couldn't love it more. Yes, more. Please, more. Make this a tough football team to deal with. Make this the type of football team, when they walk off the bus, you go, oh, no. I do not want to see those guys. 404-726-0929. That's the question of the night. Do you think, based off of what you're hearing at practice so far and the tone that he's setting for himself, that James Pierce Jr., our first round pick from this year, is going to be that dude, is going to be the tone setter? I'm not saying he's going to be the best player on defense. That's not what I'm saying. Is he going to be the turnkey guy? The guy that comes in here, sets the tone, and now the defense has a little bit different of a mentality. Or do you think it's somebody else? Is it Jesse Bates? Is it Caden Ellis? Is it Onyemata? Is it AJ? Is it Rook? Is it one of the guys that are already here? Is it Jalen Walker? I'm a little weird that he's missed the past couple of practices. What's going on there? We'll ask D-Led about that coming up next hour when he joins us and get his perspective on this. Let's hear from Leonard Floyd. He was talking about the fights at practice and how he took James Pierce Jr. under his wing.
Mostly I teach him to get back settled down once he get rowdy. I try to bring him to the side and help him cool himself down before he get real crazy with it. But he's a good guy, man. He come out and work hard, man. The linemen just don't like it, you know? The guy work hard, the linemen don't like it. So that's a good thing.
Great stuff there from the vet, Leonard Floyd. One more cut before we catch a break. Michael Penix Jr. was also asked about James Pierce Jr. And he said, look, this dude could ball. Michael Penix Jr. on James Pierce Jr.
He a baller. Yeah, Bartley, he's going to make a lot of plays for us. Excited for him, excited about him. You know, can't wait to see him on Sundays. But, you know, he's been making a lot of plays. I know I seen all on the media he was the one that started the scuffles. Usually I don't see it. I just turn around and there'd be a whole bunch going on. But, man, he bring intensity every day, you know. But he's a great player.
All right, so you just heard from a vet and from QB1. What do you guys think? Can James Pierce Jr., as a rookie, be the catalyst for this Atlanta Falcons defense this season? Or do you think it's going to come from somewhere else? You think it's going to come from one of the vets? Or is this rookie going to come in here? You just heard what Michael Penix Jr. and Leonard Floyd had to say about him. Is he going to come here and make an instant impact as a first-round pick this season? What do you think? 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. We'll get your take on that. James Pierce Jr. and his impact is the topic of conversation tonight on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock each and every weeknight. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, of course, on the Odyssey app.
All righty, sir. Chris. Let's start with this. Some of these questions, actually, Joe was kind of hinting around. So a little good synergy tonight between Joe and I and the things he was talking about and the questions I'm getting ready to ask. So,
it's all about the playlist.
All about the playlist, yes. Let's start with good old Rook Ororo. Joe mentioned that Rook was probably going to be the defensive lineman that saw the most time on the field this season. True or false? Rook finishes the 2025 season with 10 combined sacks and tackles for loss. True or false?
I think that's a good number. I'll say true. That's not crazy, right? For a second-round pick that you traded up to get, 5 sacks, 5 tackles for loss. I mean, he should get that, right?
Or any combination. It could be 3 sacks and 7 tackles for loss, but a combination that ends up equaling 10.
He better. I mean, come on now.
All right.
I'm going to say true on that one for sure. Especially if he's getting starter minutes.
Yeah, a lot more than anybody else is going to get, too, it looks like, yes. All righty, so let's fast forward to July 28th, 2026. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old child. We are 1 year in to Chris Thomas Tonight. Let's look at the Falcons headlines for that day. Oh, here's one. Drake London is now the highest paid receiver in NFL history. True or false?
A lot of that is going to depend on what happens this year. Because he's been right around Pro Bowl, All Pro, sniffing around it. He's getting better each year. Last year was his best year. You would think this year he'll be even more motivated to be better than that. If he goes, 1,250 yards and 13 touchdowns, do they have a choice? I think the choice is kind of taken out of their hands.
Made for him,
at that point. So, and I do think he's going to have a really good year this year. He's obviously their primary receiver. You know what? I'm always totally honest.
You are, Chris.
He is not the best receiver in the league. But he will be paid like it.
Okay.
Because it's his time.
Fair enough.
Top five. Not number one. He's not better than Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase.
Okay.
Or is he? No. Not those two. He could be better than Amon-Ra St. Brown because he has the size advantage.
He does. It's just Amon-Ra St. Brown, though.
He's a gamer,
and I feel like, I don't know. You can line him up, I think, more spots than – it seems like more spots.
Oh, yeah, Drake can do one – Drake is like a – but that's not a knock that he does one
thing. He just does that one thing extremely well,
he's
though.
He's the best at it in the league outside of Mike Evans, who's the Hall of Fame blueprint guy for that, playing the position that way. Mike Evans is going to the Hall of Fame playing wide receiver like a basketball player.
Just jump balls, man. Contested catches.
And Drake is taking after his tutelage footsteps.
High point, if you will.
High
the term
point,
they use.
High pointing the ball.
There we go. Much was made about James Pierce's performance this weekend. If it wasn't so much about the intensity he showed on the field, there was one play where he deflected a Kirk Cousins pass, and Kirk talked to him after practice was over with, and so it was like, hey, how'd you do that? What did you do on that play? So Kirk was very impressed with one of James Pierce's defensive plays against him from practices on Saturday. Excuse me, Sunday. True or false? Game one, play one on the defense. James Pierce is on that defensive line as a starter. True or false?
False, but he's going to have a big impact. He's going to play in every game, and he's going to basically be like the closer. Like third down, go get him, go in there, pin your ears back. I think the more we hear and the more we see, the less that narrative about him not liking football is going away.
Absolutely.
Like, you hear from his teammate who was on the radio station, you hear from the coaching staff and the teammates. Seems like he's going to be just fine, Orin. But I think AK and Floyd are still going to be the starters outside. Unless, you know, if Pierce blows them away, why not? But I see him more as, especially in year one, being used as like, you know, this is our closer. He's coming to just rip your helmet off your head, and that's what he's going to do. We're going to kiss it. Keep it simple, stupid. See ball, get ball.
The more I hear about James Pierce from his teammates and the performance he has in camp, he's beginning to be more of this term for me. And people hear this sometimes and, you know, they go, oh, I don't like that. But in the same vein of maybe a T.J. Watt, you know, or an Aaron Donald, he's a football dude. He just genuinely, it seems like, going out there and just playing football. Whatever that encompasses, whether he has to go out there and mix it up a little bit with teammates, whether he has to go out there and do drill, whatever is asked of him, it seems like, he genuinely enjoys going out there and doing so. He's got that football dude attitude for me.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. We need more of that.
Of that, absolutely. Question number four. We had the kicking battle, Mr. Krieg and Mr. Koo this weekend. Koo missed a kick. Krieg did not. He hit a 55-yarder that by estimates could have been good from 65 yards over the weekend. So question number four, this kicking battle won't be decided until we break camp. True or false?
False, because I think if they're going to cut Youngway, they're going to want to give him the respect to go find another team.
Okay.
Because I think he's meant a lot to the franchise over the last couple of years. Has been really stable and spectacular at the position. And if they feel they want to go the younger route and a new leg behind there, so to speak, I think they would do it with enough time for Youngway to try to catch on.
Okay. Final one here, sir. Speaking of roster spots, starting off on the PUP is never a good thing, especially for a guy who has spent the better part of the last two seasons hurt, very much hurt. That's linebacker Troy Anderson. True or false, Troy Anderson gets cut this preseason?
No, false. I'm going to say they give him a chance to one last go here to try to make something of himself this season. Now, if he gets hurt again this year, Orin, see ya, unfortunately. But good job on the five Falcons. True, false. We'll check in with Big O again. I got to do a movie review coming up here a little later in the show.
I've heard some fairly optimistic things, sir, about what this movie review may be. So
we shall see. That's coming up later in the show. Coming up next, Greg Allman, Fox Sports National Insider, stops by. There's so much to talk about going on in the National Football League, including, is Cleveland shopping one of their quarterbacks? We'll get into all that next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. As we say on the radio station, they're always listening, watching, and judging. And we know that the Atlanta Falcons have been doing just that. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. Let's waste no time. Head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our special guest, D. Orlando Ledbetter. D. Led, make sure you check out his work in the AJC, especially this time of year when you get all of the Falcons training camp reports. D, how did it feel today when Drake London made it known that he was listening to you, my friend, and he shouted you out on the sideline?
Hey, you know, I was cool, man. You know, me and Drake are good. He said, report that stuff, D-Led, because I reported his two drops and his two fumbles the other day. So when he made a great catch, he wanted to make sure I reported that also. That seems fair to me.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny moment there on the sideline. And it helps transition into the main topic I want to talk to you about tonight, and that is this discussion of a physicality, of a presence, of an edge that guys like James Pierce Jr. are setting the tone for the team. You've been covering this team a long time, D. Has this been one of the more physical camps that you remember?
Not really, but you know, you got to go all the way back to Harvey Dahl and Tyson Clavo. You know, the linemen that you know they. I talked to some of the old guys. They were like, "Hey, yeah, sometimes that was they just did that to get us a break." Under Coach Smith and so forth. So, but it hasn't been that physical because I mean, it's not 2-a-days. They're not as short. Yeah, we had a couple fights. But and they went through halfway through the pads today. So as far as bone crushing, pop hitting, and stuff like that, you know, it's just a different day and time. But we did have a couple fights. We haven't had them in a while, so that part of it was good to see.
Did you like to see the edge from the rookie James Pierce Jr. getting in the mix early? He's been causing a little bit of buzz around camp.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Because you know he was going a little faster than the veterans wanted him to go. This early in camp, you know, but he's trying to show people he's legit, you know, first round guy. And so, you know, the linemen didn't, you know, they don't take too kindly to the rookie trying to show him up there on the first couple practices. So, you know, they let him know that. And, you know, he was cool about it. Leonard Floyd helped him out. He's got to learn how to practice as a pro is what they were trying to teach him. That was the lesson there. You can still go hard and fast, but you know, you ain't got really, you know, jack your teammates, lift them up in the air, and all that kind of extra stuff. Some of that was going on, so you know, a little bit of both. They got an understanding now, and look like today had a new kind of flow to it.
When you talk about Leonard Floyd, the vet coming in to help the edge rush, any reason not to believe he won't get his, you know, 8-9 sacks that he usually does?
Yeah, he's done a good job late in his career. You know, he was a high draft pick. But, you know, something happened when he didn't get renewed in Chicago. And ever since then, he's been one of the better pass rushers in the league. So I expect that to continue. And, you know, we'll see if he can match that here in Atlanta.
Talk to us about this kicking battle, D. It seems like both guys are taking it very seriously and both have had strong outings so far.
Yeah, no doubt. Certainly the first day, Craig won that clearly hands down. The ball was booming off of his foot. And then today, Koo had a little bit more pop in his kicks. He had some nice, pretty end-over-end kicks. But both of them missed from 54, which, you know, you need that to be kind of automatic, you know, for your 54 and 55. So, but, you know, there, you know, some technical points. Craig's a little bit further back on his kicks because they take off a little bit lower, which, you know, might be a problem in the NFL. We'll look at that in the exhibition season if he can get his kicks up over the line. But he certainly got some power behind it. And we'll, you know, just keep an eye on that, you know, in that matchup there. But, yeah, he won the first day, and we'll call the second one a draw.
Talking about things to keep an eye on as we're chatting with our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter, make sure you check out his camp reports in the AJC. Anything to glean from Jalen Walker missing a couple of days?
The position coach says he's losing reps. He needs reps. He's learning a new position. And so, you know, but health is, you know, important. They won't say he's injured. They're saying that he's working on something on his body. So I don't know what the I looked over there. I couldn't tell what they were trying to work on, you know, footwork or upper body or agility or, you know, whatever. But something happened after the second practice, and he's been working through some stuff and trying to get back onto the field.
How's it been watching Kyle Pitts ramp back up?
Yeah, he's getting some moderated practice time. You can tell he's trying really hard. You know, he's going full speed the whole time, which, you know, we can't say that's been the case for him at all times. And, you know, just building up after not having much going on the off season with him as they protected him for the foot injury he had. So, Just, you know, you kind of got to be hopeful for him. You know, if you, you know, want to see him do bit better, he certainly seems to be on his path along the way. You know, but yeah, it's a wild off. We got a long off season to go here.
Everyone's been obviously so praising Bijan Robinson. D, is it possible he's looking even better than he has?
Oh yeah, no doubt. It's no hesitation in what he wants to do, and I've seen enough. I don't want him cutting out there anymore. I don't want him spinning on people and, yeah, you know, doing the double cuts, jump cuts. Yeah, he's got to get ready, but I don't want him. I don't save some of that for me for September the 7th.
We got a couple of weeks to figure it out. We did hear from Kirk Cousins the other day. Raheem usually doesn't play anybody in the preseason that may play in the regular season, including a backup quarterback due to injury. You think he's going to get any run in the preseason?
Yeah, he'll get probably, I'm just going off of last year, and Penix is 24 snaps. You got maybe get Kurt that 24 and keep it moving in this Detroit game, the first game, and then just shut him down and get ready for the regular season, get him a couple snaps there in the joint practices and so forth. His plan worked last year. They got off, you know, the Pittsburgh game wasn't worth much, but then after that, you know, they got rolling there. And so whatever, you know, Raheem did last year, he needs to keep and do that again because he's got another tough schedule here to open the season with.
Arthur Blank, owner and chairman, spoke with our good buddy Steve Weishti over the weekend. He wouldn't lay out playoff demands or expectations, but acknowledged that, you know, time is running out here to get things turned around. Do you think there is an internal expectation, maybe even an unspoken one, between upper management?
Yeah, he spoke to us too, the local media, and Ken Segura wrote a nice column about, you know, he just kind of went right down the middle about his expectations. He said the same thing in 22, said the same thing in 23, but he didn't say, you know, playoffs are bust, our heads are going to roll, you know, but given what's happened in the past, when expectations have not been met, there's usually some changes in Flowery Branch. So, you know, he holds folks accountable. Even the year when they were the number one seed and got blew out to the Packers, he blew out the coordinators. You know, so he's not a stand pat guy when you don't do absolutely well. That wasn't how he operated in Home Depot, and that's not how he operates with the Falcons. So anything short of, you know, not getting to the playoffs, you know, you probably need to win the division too, but if you do one of those and if you do both of them, then everybody's going to be in pretty good stead.
When it comes to a couple of more rookies, we were talking about Pierce and Walker earlier. Looks like Xavier Watts was getting in with the ones a little bit. What did you see from him?
Yeah, not much from him. He hasn't impressed me much. I've been focusing more on Fuller. You know, he's in position. You know, you can't really – you can't really blow stuff back at safety when you're tagging people out. I mean, it's gym class hero type stuff. So we'll see how he does in live actions in the games and in the joint practices. But, you know, we know what he can do. We saw him play at Notre Dame. He's getting acclimated to the NFL. Jesse said he knows what to do. Now it's just taking it to the field. So he's a pretty sharp football player. But, yeah, I don't – you know, people start making grand conclusions off of them playing tag at practice right now. I kind of try to stay away from that until we get some real football. But, yeah, he looks great playing tag right now. He's a pro athlete. Most of them do look great out there playing tag because that's what it is. It's not football. But, yeah, he's coming along.
To that same effect, the nickelback spot looks like D. Alford is getting the reps with the ones. Is Billy Bowman, you think, still in the mix?
Yeah, he's still in the mix. You know, they got to be slow with that. That's a position change. So, you know, D's probably kind of showing them, you know, how to do it, you know, and he should be picking up some stuff from D. D knows where he's supposed to be and who he's supposed to cover and the assignments and stuff like that. So that's why he's ahead of Bowman at or Bowman at this juncture. But they'll start ramping him up and getting him in there more. He'll get some reps against the twos and threes and, you know, just, you know, as he gets ready for a new position, at some point they'll have to throw him out there and see what he can do against some talent. But right now it seems like they're letting him learn, you know, how that position is played at the National Football League level.
I guess it's usually a good thing when we've gone this long and haven't talked about it. It seems like all was well, at least early on, with Caleb McGarry being the protector for Penix.
Yeah, that's not – see, they're not looking at it as that because they're in the pistol and they're, you know, in the shotgun. So they're like, he's not a blindside tackle. But I'm like, I don't believe that because when he turns his back, he's the blindside tackle. So, you know, Caleb has struggled against elite speed. So, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. But, you know, they think because of formationally, you know, it's not a blindside, so to speak. You know, if you're under center a lot, then yeah. But, I mean, they're going to be running 11 out of shotgun and pistol. And so Zach Robinson and Raheem don't look at him as a blindside tackle, and neither does Ledford. So I don't know where everybody's – I know where it's come from because I've been harping on it too. I'm like, if he's the blindside tackle, you probably got issues. But they plan to attack straight ahead out of the pistol and the shotgun, and that's they believe that minimizes that whole old concept of the blindside tackle.
All right, fair enough. Well, with that said, how has Newsel looked? Has he been adjusting as the starter just fine?
Yeah, he's just fine. You know, you see him climbing. You see him on his double teams and getting to the second level, which is what he did, you know, last year. He's laterally. He can get inside and out. I want to see him in one-on-one in the bull rushes. Kurt said he can anchor, and he said he said that's the best thing to a quarterback is that, hey, if that center can anchor up the middle and control the bull rush, you know, then you are, you know, you got time to look down the field. You're not going to be, you know, worried about anybody coming up through there. So they said he can do that. He's doing that well in practice thus far, and we'll get to see him against some pretty good tackles there from Tennessee when they come to town.
Great stuff, D. Appreciate the time as always. We'll check you out in the AJC, and we'll talk soon.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Turtle. Have a great evening.
All right. That is the great D. Orlando Ledbetter there, giving us the scope and the skinny from Flowery Branch. Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas Turtle with you till 10 o'clock each and every week night here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. New Braves pitcher Eric Fetty in action, and much to the accompaniment of his fellow Braves starters this year, immediately gives up a run. Welcome to the A, Eric Fetty. You're fitting in just fine. We'll keep you updated on the game as we always do. And he's facing a good starter in Seth Lugo, so this one's going about as well as you'd expect so far. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline, switch gears, talk some college ball with one of our favorites, Bill Bender of the Sporting News, senior writer there. Bill, let's start with Deion Sanders and the announcement yesterday, the press conference. Scary stuff, had bladder cancer, bladder removal and replacement. Looks like he is going to give it a go to coach this season. What did you make of the press conference, everything leading up to it, and everything surrounding it?
You know, the phrase I use was, I mean, it's a rare case where we saw Deion in a vulnerable state and a humanizing state. And, you know, my father died of cancer, so it struck a chord with me, certainly. I thought he was upfront, honest, and it takes a lot of courage to do what he did on the podium yesterday. And, you know, obviously in those type of things, football becomes secondary. So to have his doctors up there to give a full explanation, and to still have the upbeat personality that makes Deion Deion, I mean, it's hard to put into words because I thought it was a really cool event, and I hope he can continue coaching football. He's good for the game.
No, you're right. He absolutely is. But the flip side of that is, Bill, you need to have a good team in order to win games. What type of squad is Colorado going to have this year?
Well, I think you could ask the same question about North Carolina and Bill Belichick. There's just so much unknown there. You know, obviously, when you had Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter, two top five pick, or well, not top five picks, one top five pick and one fifth round pick. I want to get that right. But that they had some talent last year. I think Kaiden Salter's really interesting, the Liberty quarterback. He's going to change the offense a little bit because he runs, and he runs well. So I they intrigue me. And, you know, what a huge opener against Georgia Tech, that team that's billed as an ACC sleeper. Really impressive quarterback in Haynes King coming back. I mean, that's kind of, you know, as you go through the week one schedule, I know you guys have talked about it down there, but that's a sneaky, really good game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I mean, especially because Georgia Tech outside of that one and Clemson, I mean, and Georgia obviously to end the year, you would think they're probably, if not definitely, going to be at least a slight favorite in the majority of those games. They have a very easy schedule on the flats outside of Colorado, Clemson, and Georgia. So I think it's going to be a big season for Brent Key and Haynes King, as you mentioned. In the SEC, we got the news that DJ Lagway is in a boot as fall camp is going to open here. How big of news is that, and what does that mean for Billy Napier and his squad?
Well, it only matters till August 30th. Obviously, you want to have those reps. And, you know, Florida's got an absolutely brutal schedule playing seven ranked teams. So, or seven teams that I think will be ranked anyway. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you look at that, you hope for the best, but it's an unfortunate injury. And I guess, you know, how does that nature of the injury hold him back during fall camp? I mean, how much reps is he actually able to get? It's not a concern yet, but if we're still talking about that week, walking boot in 3 weeks, we're going to have a problem.
What did you make of Browns owner Jimmy Haslam's claims about Arch Manning today? I think it's funny with an NFL team that has five quarterbacks in its room to be projecting about taking another one next season.
I mean, it's talked about every day here in Ohio. The Browns have been looking for a quarterback. You know, my roommate's a Browns fan, or my college roommate was a Browns fan. He's been talking about their quarterback since 1998. So the Arch Haslam Nick Saban conspiracy theory is alive and well here in Ohio. I mean, I do think Arch, predicated on how he plays, absolutely could be the number one pick in the draft. And in a couple, but I still think, you know, Chris, I think, isn't it possible that he stays another year? I mean, in that, you know, where he can play 2 years in Texas, don't you buy that?
Well, you would know better than I what the 2027 projected QB class looks like. I know this one, he certainly has a couple of guys that may, if they have great seasons, could give him a run for his money, Bill.
I agree. You know, Cade Klubnik and Drew Allard's a big year for him. And even, you know, like Lenore Sellers is a really hot name right now. If he has a monster year for South Carolina. So I think it's just a hunch. This is speculation. I can't like back this up, but I'm going off the Manning family history. You know, Peyton Manning played 4 years. Eli Manning played 5 years. And so I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Arch Manning started for the next 2 years at Texas, especially with the NIL, right? Like it's not going to be money. I don't think it's money with the Mannings anyway. And I do think there's a development aspect to it. I was pointing this stat out. I don't know if I've done it on your show, but since Peyton Manning was drafted in 98, only two quarterbacks have been taken number one with 1 year of starting experience. And that's Cam Newton and Kyler Murray. So that's my way of saying it would take that kind of year for him to get drafted at number one.
When it comes to Alabama and the next season for Kalen DeBoer, we all know how important it is. What do you make of their quarterback situation there? To the best of my knowledge, has Ty Simpson been named the starter officially?
No, and it wasn't exactly like a ringing endorsement. It was an endorsement at SEC Media Day, but it wasn't like a overwhelming endorsement, and that's kind of something I have been paying attention to. They do have other options with Austin Mack and Keelan Russell. There is a lot of pressure on Kalen DeBoer. So, the two hardest quarterbacks for me to rank this year in the SEC are, if we're being honest, Gunnar Stockton and Ty Simpson. Because I know the program they're in. I know the pressure they're in. I know both have some talent, but they definitely need guys to play well around them. So both of those things can be true, but I mean, on the spot against Florida State in week one, there's no doubt about that.
So you mentioned Georgia and Gunnar Stockton. I think the leg up Stockton has is not actually himself, but what he has around him. I think Oscar Delp, another year as being a full-time tight end there, it's going to be a great security blanket. They brought in Branch. They brought in a bunch of wide receivers to help a core last year that, Bill, quite frankly, was embarrassing at certain points. Carson Beck would have had a lot gaudier numbers had they been able to hold on to the ball. So you would hope that a couple of guys coming in that were highly touted prospects and haven't panned out yet are going to give Gunnar Stockton a lot of weapons. And then you have the running game behind Nate Frazier and a stout offensive line that, if all things go according to plan, much like they unfortunately did not last year, Gunnar might not actually have to do too much in terms of just being a guy that gets his playmakers the ball.
Correct. All of that's correct. I think that was something that with Carson Beck last year, you know, you had the turnovers, but how much of it, I have said this, and I know you guys probably talked about it, you know, losing Ladd and losing Brock and losing, I mean, look how good they were on Sunday last year. Pretty good. Ladd especially was so, what a, not a surprise, but man, he became a huge part of that attack. So I totally understand that. And I think with Gunnar Stockton, I like his mobility. I mean, it was in flashes in the Notre Dame game, but there was a little bit of like, man, that kind of looked like Stetson Bennett a little bit, you know, the way he would get out of pressure and move. And I think with more reps, he's going to be just fine. Simpson's more of an unknown, but I am a believer in, and you saw it with Garrett Nussmeier, Miller Moss to a point before it bottomed out, but I'm a guy that I do believe in waiting your turn. And those guys certainly have waited their turn, and I root for guys that wait their turn, and I hope both do well.
Talking with our buddy Bill Bender, Sporting News senior writer. Make sure you check out all of his college football work there. When it comes to the rest of the Georgia squad here, we are excited about a revamped defense and hopefully looking more like the two teams that won national titles back-to-back as opposed to what it's looked like the last couple of years. How much of an offensive conference do you expect the SEC to be this season with the guys that we talked about with Nussmeier and Arch Manning? Do you expect it to be one of the more highly competitive in terms of offensive output?
I think so. I mean, when you have that kind of quarterback play and that amount of depth at that position, it certainly means that we're going to see some points. I mean, I think how many of the top 10 Heisman contenders are SEC quarterbacks? At least four. So, yeah. You know, when you have that and the upside of all of that, you know, I've shied away from trying to figure out the Heisman. I think because of all those, any one of those SEC quarterbacks could do it. You know, Jeremiah Smith could do it at Ohio State. The only caution there I have is he's got to share with other really awesome receivers at Ohio State. So I don't know, you know, you have to get the numbers to do it. But to answer your question, yes, I think they're going to be high-scoring games. That's the way the game is. They're going to be highly entertaining. I think we'll have, when you have 10 ranked teams, which the SEC probably will have, you're going to have a lot of one-score games. So I think even break that down further, the quarterbacks that are clutch in the fourth quarter and in one-score games are the ones we're going to stand out.
Speaking of standing out, Rhett Lashley was certainly standing out at Media Days. Do you think he backs up his talk this year with the Mustangs?
You know, I was sitting in that breakout last week in Charlotte, and I think, one, you love coaches that talk like that because it writes your story for you, and two, no, I think SMU definitely has something there. Now, is it at the level of an SEC power? No, not yet. But, you know, to be able to kind of buy your way into the game and then back it up by going and making the playoff, making the ACC championship, you're in a good market. I think Rhett's got them really believing that, and there's a lot of backing behind that SMU program. Now, I said some of the math with the SEC, the way I look at it, and you know I live in Big Ten country, is the SEC has been the most dominant conference since the BCS era. Anybody who says otherwise is wrong, right? But and I think what separates them a little bit is having six programs where their fan bases, we could do this exercise on the side at some point, but how many fan bases in the SEC there that they wake up today and they say we can win a national title? I think they have the most that can say that and actually mean it, right? Like as opposed to the Big Ten, where I think that's actually three or four.
Speaking of the Big Ten, are you on the Illinois hype train?
Well, I mean, yeah, because I think they're going to – well, the hype train to me is they're going to be ranked top 15. That's about right. You know, they did beat South Carolina in the bowl game, so they should, in theory, be ranked ahead of them. Luke Altmyer's back. He's played a ton of football. Gabe Jokic is a part of their interior. Their schedule's set up very well. You know, Ohio State's really the only ranked team they're going to play. So if they can beat Indiana, they can beat USC, you know, Brett will have his chance. And you know what? That's kind of cool. I think the way the Big Ten is situated right now, you have Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, and it's kind of a competition for that fourth spot. You know, Michigan's going to be better. Illinois will be good. Indiana will be good. Waiting to see what happens with USC. But, I mean, that's the clump of teams you're dealing with.
How close is Michigan State to getting their act back together? They've been, obviously, we know what happened a couple of years ago, and they've been kind of dormant since then.
You know, what they miss about Mark D'Antonio was that he was so good at recruiting a three-star kid and giving that three-star kid more of a fire, an edge. Darquez Denard is the first name that popped up in my head. He was a great All-American corner they had. And they played over their head every year. And that's going to be the challenge for Jonathan Smith because they are a little bit behind on recruiting. The Michigan game, they built based so much off of that. And, you know, when they lose to Michigan, it typically goes south after. So my way of saying, you know, we'll see. But I like Jonathan Smith. I think he's a good players coach. I just think that D'Antonio was the guy that was perfect for that job, and they haven't found that yet.
Bill, appreciate the time. As always, looking forward to our chats as college football gets closer and closer. We'll check you out in the sporting news.
I can't believe August is here. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
You got it. Thanks, Bill.